It's 9 o'clock on Sunday, the 13th of June. Time for Beyond Belief. You're very welcome to Beyond Belief on this Sunday evening. This is Stephen Fletcher with you for the next hour. And we have a special programme for you this evening. Every 4 weeks or so, we like to combine the myriad talents of our four presenters. That's Joanne O'Brien, Father Brendan Quinlivan, Father Jerry Kenny, and myself, Stephen Fletcher. And we combine all these talents into one programme. How we fit it all into 60 minutes, I just don't know. We begin, as ever, with music, and here's Claire's own Sharon Shannon with a jolly little tune from her latest album.
La quarantaine terminée, arrivé par milliers au cœur de notre quartier, nos griffins tendent à trembler. Sur Wellington ou Bazin, loge ici nos gros voisins. Ils ont aménagé une armée désarmée, une grande armée d'ouvriers. D'Irlande, ils sont arrivés, d'espérances ébranlées. La musique a dansé pour se raconter qu'ils venaient de tout changer. Étions bien une nation, avec le même patron. Dans l'usine on est frères, dans l'église on est pères. C'est bien assez pour se plaire. Dans le faubourg de Saint-Anne, à la taverne de Joe Beef, on oublie nos malheurs, on gicle toute la nuit pour se refaire un pays. D'Irlande, ils sont arrivés, l'espérance s'est branlée. La musique a dansé pour se raconter qu'ils venaient de tout changer. Sont arrivés, l'espérance s'est branlée. La musique a dansé pour se raconter. Il venait de tout changer. Au final, on danse encore ensemble malgré les dédales. La musique qui rassemble. D'Irlande, ils sont arrivés, l'espérance s'est branlée. La musique a dansé pour se raconter. Il venait de tout changer. Arrivé, l'espérance s'est branlée. La musique a dansé pour se raconter. Il venait de tout changer.
With Sharon Shannon with a French-Canadian group called Le Vin du Nord. And that's on her latest album, The Reckoning. And it's interesting to see how all the different styles of music which she embraces. And so that was called Refrain d'Irlande, which I'm reliably informed means Irish choruses. Coming up in the programme, we have Father Brendan Quinlivan talking to the new bishop-elect of Ferns, and that's somebody that you may well know. And we'll be hearing that interview after this. Well, with the familiar little jingle that I've got there, Jerry, it's Here We Are Again, Happy As Can Be. Jerry, it's really good to be back with you again. How are you?
And good to be chatting with you again, Stephen. I'm fine, actually, thank you. A touch of summer around, especially with last weekend with the bank holiday, and the temperatures increasing a little bit anyway and giving us some sort of flavour of summer.
Yeah, we've had some good weather here. First time in what seems to be a very long time we've actually had some sunshine. But it lifts the spirits, Jerry, doesn't it?
It does. And certainly has made a huge difference to localities like Kilkenny all along the coast, now that the emphasis this year is on staycation and people remaining here in Ireland or in their own locality to some extent, and being able to take a break there. Certainly at the weekends here, an increase in numbers coming and visiting the resort and touring around as well. And of course the businesses are glad of that, and after being closed for such a long time, and with the open air dining and pubs being able to serve outside, quite a number have availed of that and had to do some sort of renovations and make accommodations so that people could be able to be seated outside comfortably and that. But it seems to be working quite well.
Yeah, it's good to get back to normal. Last weekend we travelled back to where we used to live in Hertfordshire and celebrated with a lunch in a pub garden with a whole load of friends. It was a 70th birthday lunch. Very nice. But it was just like the old times, Jerry, you know, to sit there with friends that we'd known for many years and enjoy a meal in the sunshine. It was a lovely day. And it was really delightful. And it just reminds you how much we've been missing over these past, more than a year since we've been able to do that here.
Yes, I mean, I think what everybody misses is just being able to sit down with friends and chat, even for families to do that as well. For so long, perhaps we took it for granted, and only when it was stopped did we realise how much and how important it was for our own well-being.
But we've been looking at other things to do during these problematic times, haven't we, Jerry? I don't know. What have you been doing to take your mind off what's happening at the moment?
Well, I suppose my escape has usually been in terms of music and just dipping into the treasure trove of music that I have had and hadn't opportunities to listen to for quite a while, and I've enjoyed that. But also, I suppose, everybody, I think, has done some bit of streaming of movies and things like that, such as Netflix, and just keeping abreast with things. But one of the changes that has happened here significantly in Ireland this week has been the opening of cinemas as well. I don't know how long it will take me to actually go back into a cinema, but there are certain films that really you have to go to the cinema to see, to get the experience, the full experience and things like that. Hopefully, as time progresses, we'll begin to be able to do that. Of course, live theatre is still only just gradually, I think, thinking about how it will cope and reopen. But all of that whole entertainment world has changed for people. But it's good to see at least cinemas reopening again and people being able to go back there to watch the movies.
Yeah, and I see that Lord Lloyd Webber, who owns 6 theatres in London, is saying that he's going to open on the 21st of June and will go to prison. He's quite determined. He's saying that enough is enough. They've been pouring money away during the lockdown. They haven't had support. He's got staff that he's trying to keep on, and he's said that's it. And so 21st, which is meant to be the earliest date that things could start to open up. He's saying that's when he's opening. So look out. We could have a peer of the realm locked up in Holloway Prison if we don't watch out.
One of the things, Stephen, that has interested me, and I've been watching it just recently in the past month or so, is there are a number of films that were made perhaps prior to the pandemic or just during the pandemic times, but they have been delayed from being released simply because cinemas weren't open and things like that. But one that has particularly taken my own fancy is a remake of the 1961 movie West Side Story, which was originally taken from a Broadway musical of 1957. And I think people will be quite familiar with it. You know, a marvellous score by Leonard Bernstein, lyrics by Stephen Sondheim. But it's a powerful story based, of course, on Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. And it really speaks about conflict and there's so much in that whole story. But it's going to be very interesting to see how Steven Spielberg deals with this, because the 1961 movie itself is iconic, and because it actually won 10 Academy Awards in the year that it hit the screens in 1961. But with a director like Stephen Sondheim taking a new look at this, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens to it and how it will speak to a new audience in the 21st century.
Yeah. And when do you think it will be released in Ireland, Gerry?
Well, it's in America, it's not going to be released, I think, until the 10th of December. I'm not sure if it's going to be streamed on one of the Disney channels or platforms, but I presume it should have a cinema release as well, because they've poured millions into this production, apparently, and they've tweaked a little bit of the characters in it. One of the originals from the 1961 movie, Rita Moreno, who played the iconic role of Anita, is now in this movie, but in a different character. She's now, if you like, the shop owner. She's the go-between, or the place of refuge in that community. But the story itself is so powerful, and what's very interesting is they've released the trailer for this movie. It can be viewed on YouTube if you just type in West Side Story 2021. And just the feel of that trailer alone, it's getting quite a good deal of comment, because it just creates the right atmosphere for that powerful story that is West Side Story.
Well, we look forward to seeing it. I haven't been to the cinema in many, many years. It wasn't something that I'd do. I didn't often go to the cinema at all. In recent years, it's been quite nice to go with Francis on a pensioner's special morning or something, to go up and catch up. But we have been streaming with Netflix and things like that. So we've watched all of The Crown now, which for us is very interesting. I know it seems to have gripped people across the world, but for the people who have lived through, you know, as we have, we've lived through a lot of what The Crown covers. And so it's very interesting to see the take that they had. And of course, they say it's fiction, but you know, there's a good bit of fact that is laid through there as well, so that's very interesting. And also, we've been obsessed by a television program called Line of Duty about police corruption. That's gripped the nation, that has. And I don't know if it's going to be released across in Ireland, but we've been watching.
Well,
that.
Yeah, a number of my friends have talked about that. It's on my to-do list, but I simply haven't had the time to sit down and watch a series, because sometimes when you get into something like that, you're inclined to binge and you need a bit of time to be doing that.
Sunday afternoon to sit there and just and of course they automatically just roll around one after another, and you know, it's very easy to do. But yeah, it's interesting. But something a bit more active that I've taken up during this lockdown that we've had, our gyms reopened about 2 or 3 months ago, and a good friend of mine here is a priest at one of the churches that I'm involved in, and he is what we call a self-supporting minister, and that means that he doesn't get paid, because he's got a proper job, and he is actually a GP, he's a doctor, and he happens to be my GP. And so he's issuing me instructions as not only my medical advisor, but my spiritual advisor as well. And he goes to the gym. Most mornings he goes to this gym at 6 6 a.m. in the morning. Well, I can't claim to go anywhere at 6 a.m. in the morning, but he goes there and he persuaded me to go along. I even have a personal trainer at the moment, Jerry. And so I tell you, you will not recognise me when I finally get back.
No, I mean, you'll have to send me a photograph so that when we meet in the street, I'll know you, Stephen.
But, I mean, it's taken a while, but when I went this week, I actually did quite enjoy it. It was hard work. But I got what my daughters were trying to get me to discover. You get endorphins released, apparently, when you physically exercise for any length of time. You get endorphins, which make you feel good. And I was thinking, yeah, we'll see. Anyway, it happened, and I was feeling quite good. So that's encouraged me. I've been too busy. I did go out for a walk today, but I haven't been to the gym. But I shall try and get there tomorrow morning. And, I'll see if the endorphins kick in again. And there are signs of improvement for me. But I told him, when I started with this trainer, I said, look, this is the first time I've been in a gym for 70 years. You know, I'm there to just try and get a little bit fitter.
Good for you, Stephen. And that's, I suppose, been another message that has been carrying forward to us all through the pandemic, is the need for us to get that bit of exercise and to get out and about, even though we at times were restricted in how far we could go. But the importance of getting out and not just becoming couch potatoes during this period. Well, hopefully the weather will help us to do that as well. You know, it was great to see at the weekend lots of people out walking and wanting to avail of the open airs and get out and about.
You were talking about staycations and how it's been very helpful to Kilkee and the likes, and I can understand that. Equally, there are problems for residents in Cornwall and Devon down in the southwest there. One of the things is because this past week we've had the G7 summit there, but even before all that, the house prices have gone up something like 10 or 15% in a year because people are realising that they want to have a holiday home in England. And whereas they might have gone abroad, they're now looking to stay in England, and which is okay, but it means that local people are being priced out of the housing market. And so the people who provide the services, the people in the shops, the people in the restaurants, they can't afford to live there. And so you have this ridiculous situation where it's too expensive for ordinary people to live now because it's become a holiday centre. And, you know, that is something that I don't know how it can be sorted, but it's most unfair for young people who are keen to work and want to work, but they just cannot afford housing because the incomers have pushed up the prices. I don't know if you've seen anything similar over there, Jerry.
Well, they say that something similar is happening here in Ireland too. I don't know how dramatic it is, but certainly there has been quite an interest, I believe, in any local properties that have come on the market. And I suppose in so many ways, Stephen, this pandemic is going to make changes and affect things across all levels of our human existence, be it in economics or whatever terms. But, you know, everything is going to be affected because everything has changed, because our behaviour has to change and we have to, accommodations have to be made for that. And we've been talking about it over a number of weeks in terms of our own religious practice and that. But it's affected in so many other ways in the lifestyle and the way people are going to engage with one another, I think, into the future. And, you know, like the whole thing of working at home or working at an office now is going to be a whole new choice for people to make.
Yeah. And of course, if you're allowed to work from home and providing you've got good internet connection, it makes no difference then whether you're just up the road from the office or whether you're hundreds of miles away. And that's what people are doing into Devon and Cornwall, which is why it's boomtown down there at the moment. But it is a shame for the residents there who their children can't afford to live there.
Well, Stephen, I'm very conscious now that you probably need to do another little bit of exercise, maybe, get ready for the gym in the morning and that. And so I don't want to take up much more of your time here this evening. But as always, it's been great to chat and look forward to our next conversation as well. And regards to Francis and all of you over there. And hopefully over the summer period, you will be able to travel back.
Yeah. Well, let's hope so, Jerry. Yeah. Anyway, thank you very much. And yes, I will go and have my daily workout and a rub down, and I'll be fit for the morning in the gym.
God bless you, Stephen. Thanks for chatting.
Thanks, Jerry. Cheerio. Jerry was talking about the new film version of West Side Story, and I thought it would be rather nice to play something from that show. And here's Michael Ball and Alfie Beau with Somewhere. That was Michael Ball and Alfie Beau, Somewhere, from West Side Story. And we're developing a theme of being called now. Here's Daniel O'Donnell with Here I Am, Lord.
I, the Lord of sea and sky, I have heard my people cry, all who dwell in dark and sin, my hand will save. I who made the stars of night, I will make their dark bright, who will bear my light to them? Whom shall I send? Here I am, Lord. Is it I?
It's Sunday night and you're tuned beyond belief here on Clare FM. Well, on Friday afternoon in St Aidan's Cathedral in Enniscorthy in County Wexford, it was announced that Pope Francis had appointed as the new Bishop of Ferns a native of Tulla in East Clare, a priest of the Diocese of Killaloe, our Director of Pastoral Planning, Father Ger Nash. And I'm delighted to have the opportunity to talk to Father Ger on the programme this evening. Father Ger, I presume congratulations are in order, but maybe you'd give us a little bit of your reaction to your appointment as Bishop of Ferns.
Thank you very much, Brendan, and thank you for the kind words. Yeah, I have to say I was absolutely shocked when I got the call from the nuncio, Archbishop O'Colo, to come to the nunciature in Dublin. He told me the reason. He told me the reason why he was asking me to come up and to become the Bishop of Ferns. It was the farthest thing from my mind. And when he rang me, needless to say, I didn't sleep much that night, but I travelled up and we talked a little bit about why he thought I might be the right person. And he gave me a week to think about it. And so, you know, I accepted the wishes of the Pope Francis, and of the people who felt that I might do a good job, and I hope to fulfil their expectations.
I can only imagine that week between receiving the invitation and fully accepting it must have been a difficult week for you. Talk to me a little bit about the decision to say yes to the request of the Pope. That's not one that's easily arrived at, I'd imagine.
No, these kind of decisions aren't easily come to, Brendan. I suppose, reflecting back on all of the different roles I have done in the diocese in over 30 years of working in the diocese, I've often been asked to step out of what I was doing to do something different. And I've always done it. I've always been a bit unsure whether that was the right thing. But I think it has always worked out. So there was a certain amount of that, saying that you know that the Lord whose work we're doing will sustain us, you know, even when we're not sure ourselves at a human level that we're able to do it. So I suppose speaking to you know, spiritual director and people who were who helped me to discern over that week was hugely helpful, and great, very grateful to the presence of people who did walk with me during that week and helped in the discerning process.
You come to a position of leadership in the church in Ireland at what is a very difficult and challenging and changing and transforming time for the church in Ireland. But you bring to that a wealth of pastoral experience in different ministries here in the Diocese of Killaloe. But I suppose not least of all is your upbringing in the family of faith. And certainly I know from experience in Tulla that your family was very much a family of faith and membership of the parish community was just so important to them all.
It was, I suppose, our faith community really was Drumcharlie, more than Tulla, but we were very rooted in the Drumcharlie community and in the wider Tulla parish, obviously. But I suppose it was church, but also community. Building the being part of a whole range of activities across the community that didn't confine church to Sundays, but actually said that it was important to be to build up people right through the week in every aspect. And you know, so many people grow up in so many difficult circumstances. It's a privilege to be able to look back in a place where you grew up in a safe, warm, kind of loving environment, and not just with your family but with neighbours as well. You know that you grew up in a home that was bigger than your own kitchen. There was actually there was a whole townland of people, all of whom in a sense were your parents and your brothers and sisters, because they formed you in 100 different ways. And so so I suppose that whole journey of faith started, you know, easily and comfortably in that place.
In your work in the diocese as well, you've had a varied experience, not just in terms of parish work, but other kinds of pastoral activities. Your initial appointment here in Killaloe was as a teacher and a chaplain in the school in Rossgray. One of the key areas that we are going to be looking to in terms of the future of the church, and I'm sure Ferns is no different to Killaloe in this, is the whole connection we have with young people. Do you see that as going to be an important aspect of your ministry as a shepherd in the Diocese of Ferns?
I think it's going to be very, very important, Brendan. And I think the key thing is we are following the call of Pope Francis. We're going to have to be a missionary rather than maintenance. So that's not so much about as getting them in here to us as always going out to where they are and understanding the challenges, but also being able to tap into the huge generosity that is in the lives of young people and their willingness to do all sorts of challenging and generous things with their life. And at the same time, that they won't ever fit in to the categories that we had for faith, that we grew up with faith and church and parish. Those categories don't fit anymore in a digital age, in an online age. But we, in some way, we have to be able to walk with people walk with the young people and listen to their story and be able to bring the gospel to their lives.
One of the other areas in which you worked, you spent a number of years at the helm in Clare Care, which along with the North Tipperary Social Services has been a really visionary institution in terms of social care and social values of the gospel. That aspect of our faith, of acts of mercy, acts of charity, acts of love, is that going to be in many ways a more visible sign of what it means to be a church community, maybe than even our devotional lives into the future?
Yeah, I think it'll be a question of balance, really. I think we have the great richness of our faith, the gospel message, which is the treasure we carry. The question is the world we carry it out into. We need to understand the world we carry it out into and the culture that's now developing. And certainly I had a hugely rewarding and enjoyable time for the 7 years I was in Clare Care, working with great people and working with people who had absolutely no idea of watching the clock. You know, people who worked, you know, who just simply worked while people needed their assistance, and people who were generous with their time and their talents and with their imagination as well about new ways to do things and to be with people. So it was a great privilege, and I look back on it with great fondness. And I think, you know, in the places where the church, even in today's world, you know, the Brother Kevins, the Peter McVerys, the Sister Stens, all these people from a faith background, you know, people see the relevance of their story and the relevance that they are in the world, and that the gospel, that they're not just social workers, they're actually gospel people doing gospel work with people who are in the very ages.
In most recent times, you have been working in the whole area of pastoral planning, and particularly the formation of lay people to take leadership in our faith communities, and the whole idea of collaborative ministry. You're moving in to be shepherd of a diocese, the leader of a particular church, in a time when numbers of clergy are in decline and when the age profile of clergy is increasing. Do you see the work that you've been doing in terms of formation of laity and the beginnings and the strengthening of collaborative ministry? Will that be part of the hallmark, hopefully, of your leadership in the Diocese of Ferns?
I have learned so much over the last 3 years, in the last 5 years really, in pastoral development, but the last 3 years where we've been working with 25 people who have very generously and courageously offered themselves for our ministry in the diocese, who are a constant inspiration to those of us on the formation team who work with them, a constant inspiration, and by virtue of their generosity, their openness, their willingness to take time, spend time learning, and great generosity of spirit that they took on that call. 12 of them are training as catechists, 13 in pastoral care. And I think it's been a huge learning experience for all of us that have been involved with them, and for myself in particular now, which I will always take with me. I think it has certainly solidified in my mind the fact that that training people for ministry, training lay people for ministry, will be a key aspect of my time in Ferns, please God. Working with priests as well, who are in a vulnerable period, in a vulnerable time as well, because all of the assumptions and the world vision that they went to, that all of us went into priesthood with, say, anything over 20 years ago, that has changed totally. Everything we assumed would be true has proved not to be true. And yet, there's never as, yeah, our vocation is as alive and as valid as ever. So it's to find how we can nurture that in a way that really nourishes our soul. And then collaboration really is about that. It's about seeing that we're all workers in the vineyard, that there is more than enough work for everyone, that the world needs all of our talents, all of our vocations, all of our enthusiasm for the gospel. Please God, I'll try and foster that and draw that out of as many people as I can, lay and clergy.
So, Father Gerard, the announcement of your appointment was made in St. Aidan's Cathedral in Enniscorthy on Friday. You're not the first clergyman to go to Wexford. What do the future days unfold, or have you any idea what lies ahead?
I think over the summer, Brendan, we'll be planning, you know, there will be an ordination as a bishop towards the end of the summer. It'll possibly be a COVID ordination, you know, which has its own limitations. It'll probably be a very limited event. Certainly there have been two bishops ordained in the past 12 months, Martin Hayes and Paul Dempsey, and they were very low-key, very, very small events, as all liturgies are, as we all know, for everything, families, funerals, weddings, baptisms and everything. So it'll be the same scale. So the date will probably be, but we'll have to avoid any possibility that there might be a clash between two clear people, one leading Wexford in Croke Park on a last Sunday in August, and me trying to gather a crowd in Enniscorthy on the same day.
On that note, we'll wind up. But again, I think, as we said at the beginning, it's a changing, a challenging, a transforming time for the church everywhere in Ireland. But you would be hopeful. You wouldn't take on this ministry if you weren't.
No, absolutely. I think, Brendan, as you say yourself, it's a turning point in the church. You know, all the things that are important will never change. The gospel, the love of God for us, our call to be witnesses to the gospel in the world. But the model that we had in Ireland, which we inherited and which all of us grew up in, that's coming to an end because of just simply the way the Spirit has moved the church in Ireland. So, you know, it's going to be a time of great excitement and really looking forward to seeing the birth of something new. And I suppose what I'd love is that people that know me around the county would keep me in their prayers over the next years, indeed in the months and years ahead.
That was Father Ger Nash, the Bishop-elect of Ferns, talking to Father Brendan Quinlivan. And I'm sure our thoughts and prayers will go with the new bishop as he travels across to Wexford.
She bid me take love easy Sally Gardens, my love and I did meet. She passed the Sally Gardens with little snow white feet. She bid me take love easy as the grass grows on the weir. But I was young and foolish, and now I am full of tears.
And that was our own Maura O'Connell singing Down by the Sally Gardens. Fionn O'Nuálán is an author, broadcaster, columnist and advocate of gardening for health and well-being. He has a background in medicinal botany, nutritional science and horticultural therapy. He's written books such as The Holistic Gardener, Natural Cures for Common Ailments and Beauty Treatments from the Garden, as well as By Time Is Everything Revealed, Irish Proverbs for Mindful Living. In this next interview, he shares his passion for the outdoors and our need to respect it and to discover a new God within nature, saying this could help to address our current climate crises. He tells us how important it is to absorb the properties of plants, looking in particular at the traditional Irish vegetable cabbage. He also talks about how religions such as Christianity can rekindle some of the earlier teachings of saints like St. Francis or St. Kevin, who had a deep connection with the earth and to creatures around us. He explains more to us now.
Cabbages are quite high in sulforaphanes, and sulforaphane in botany terms really is the immune system of that plant. It means that when the pest comes along to eat it, it's too bitter. But it also means that when the viral infections or the bacterial infections come along, the acidity of the sulfur actually breaks down their structures and they can't proliferate into the plant. Turns out when we eat it, it does the same for us. So sulfur is really good to boost the human immune system. And eating cabbages in particular, because they have that high quality, is really good at the time of the year when they're in season to help us ward off bacterial infections in autumn and viral infections in wintertime. And if you look at the whole thing with kind of fermented foods, the lactic acid and stuff, again, that's contaminated in the cabbage, improve the bacterial stuff that's there. It wipes out the bad bacteria in the stomach and allows the good bacteria to grow. So if we're modifying cabbages for a longer shelf life, what are we doing? What are we doing to the sulforaphanes? If we're trying to make them resistant to diseases, well, it's like with humans, you know. If you go out as a child and you're exposed to the dog licking your face and the muck in the field, you're going to be exposed to the pathogens and your immune system is going to build up the army to deal with. If all of these plants are already being bred to be resistant to certain things, they don't produce the chemicals. So it's like that with your lavender. If you're growing lavender because you want to be able to get at the antiviral properties that are in its aromatic oils, if it's not exposed to stressful situations, it doesn't produce them. So if you're growing under polytunnels, it doesn't work. So how we grow our food and how we grow our herbs, they need to be stressed to produce their chemistry. That's the beautiful thing about nature, is really when we're ingesting something from another source, it's like the old thing of that, you know, you're taking in the power of the plant. You know, this is why, you know, you look at early societies where trees were worshipped or plants were worshipped or snakes or whatever. It was that thing about you adopted the energy of the plant. Modern science has proved that it's a nutritional thing or a phytochemical thing, and that has an impact on the enzymes in our body or the pH of our blood or what endorphins are released from the brain. So it's that connection with nature is much more fundamental than just appreciating the view. Now, you go back to the earliest days of kind of, you know, people talking about kind of hugging trees and kind of connecting with tree worship. Here in Ireland, we would have had, you know, the Om language, which is based on all the different strikes, each relating to 13 trees. And back then we had 13 months because Halloween was a whole month in itself. There's a thing now, Shirin Yoko, I think it's called, which is the Japanese term for forest bathing. Now, we've been doing this since the Iron Age. You know, if you read about, you know, Cúchulainn and stuff like that, after battle, he went and he walked in the forest. So what is it that walking in the forest does? Well, the green slows down your systolic blood pressure. that helps remove cortisol and stress markers from the body. But certain trees, specifically pine trees, give off terpenes. Now, terpenes is what people would be using aromatherapeutic oils for, also CBD oil. They have a coating system upon receptors in the skin and receptors within the brain that are deeply pain relieving and deeply sedative. So taking a walk, now you're not going to fall asleep halfway through the forest, but what it does is it resets your brain from alpha fast waves down to theta waves, which is the same experience you get from deep meditation. Yeah. So a walk in the woods actually, you know, is the best detox you can get.
Do you think we can rekindle that spirituality? I mean, within modern religions like Christianity or Islam, you know, do you think we can rekindle some of that connection with nature?
I don't know. I would hope so. And there are certain threads within each religion that would have held on to the nature aspect. The thing that I would worry about is if everybody is just purely focused on good deeds for their soul and getting to the afterlife, are they respecting their present life and the nature that we share that current life with? But like that, Buddha had an appreciation of nature. Jesus does mention, consider the lilies and stuff. So there are threads and traces there. And I think in Ireland, we were very successful at doing it. Even in terms of some of the earliest stuff I heard about St. Kevin and the board landing in his hand and all that. People heard about St. Francis of Assisi and what a rebel, you know, for the start, you know. But the fact that he got reduced to being kind of patron saints of your pets kind of misses the message. But here in Ireland, with lots of air monks who kind of took to the Skelligs and took to Glendalough, and they immersed themselves in nature. And that there's an older tradition there. If there's that poem about Mad Sweeney, you know, the king who goes crazy and he goes and he becomes a hermit in the woods. There's a transformative aspect that happens through that. So his dark night of the soul, he took to nature to become healed. This is the remediative effect of nature. I mean, if you look at the rise of horticultural therapy, well, that poem is really, really ancient. It's in our tradition. That was saying to people, embrace nature and nature will cure you. You can still have your relationship with God within that, because God is nature. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the reality of it. And nature is human nature, and human nature is actual nature. So it's, yeah, you look at Scottus and stuff like that, where he was talking about nature too. There are threads of it here. We are very connected. The fact that the shamrock is our national symbol, that kind of says it all. We are, or have been for so long, a rural, agricultural, nature-based society. I know that's changing, and you know, everybody wants to work for Google and walk around all day with a cup of coffee in the hand. Drink it, and drink it, get rid of it, and then take time to look around, you know, feel the sun on your skin, feel the ambient temperature. That's a mindfulness practice, just being connected there in with nature, coming into your now, lowering your stress markers. So we do have in Ireland a very spiritual connection with the land. All of our seasons and our celebrations are connected in with that. The eight festivals of light, that even in terms of Halloween and Halloween being Samhain and being a harvest festival. I know that kind of got lost, and it's about kind of trick or treat, and there's a little bit of a greed element in that. But the thing of like kind of bobbing for apples and stuff, if we start to bring that back, if we introduce that to our kids and our grandkids and keep some of the cultural stuff alive, then in an appreciation for nature in itself, an appreciation for where our food comes from, in appreciation for respecting the planet, there's a natural spirituality that actually flows from that, because there's an awareness and an enlightenment and a pure connection in to what I would call the source of everything. That happens in that, you know. For me, when I garden, I mean, it's a Zen practice in a way, because it's a total distraction. You know, I'm focused on whatever I'm focused on. And if you look kind of, the Zen monks went off and they start raking gravel as a way to meditate. You know, they have a particular breathing practice that they do. There's a breath control mechanism in how they do it. How did Irish monks do it? Well, they went and they took a look at all of the plants that had a healing principle, and they grew them and they shared them, you know, and they took that into Europe and they shared that around Europe. Lots of the medicinal knowledge that we have is from here, you know, and it's from Irish monks in other regions around Europe. That thing of officinalis, that comes from the officiates, the room at the back of the monastery where all of the healing herbs were kept. And when you went and you visited to get your healing remedy, you got a little stamp on your hand to say which one you should get, and that's where the official seal of approval comes from. You know, there you go. Like, that's sanctified, that the actual herb is sanctified as a legitimate medicine.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. And I mean, do you think, you mentioned St. Francis and you talked about what a rebel he was. I mean, do you think it's hopeful that the Pope, the first Pope to take the name Francis, took the name Francis?
Yeah, you know, and I think that's probably by intent. But it's like anything, it takes such a long, long time for subtle changes to be fully appreciated. And for, you know, the ripples. But there is that first moment where it's just one drop, you know, and it does take time before you can fully appreciate to see how things move out. So it will be interesting to see over the next couple of years how approaches change and attitudes shift in the face of really a global secularism, really, when you think about it. I mean, commerce is winning, and I don't know if within that, if that's people's pure drive. I'd worry about, you know, if your only concern is how many likes you got on Facebook in the day, really, where's your head at? Before you even get to where is your soul at, where's your head at? And the psychological issues that are kind of cropping up in relation to new technology and new approaches to people wanting to have personal fame and personal high status, and it's all tied up in a kind of a me. How do you combat that? Now, maybe when you are out in nature and you are connected in with stuff, you know, I would work a lot as a horticultural therapist. I would work an awful lot with people with physical difficulties and disabilities, but I would work a lot with people who also would have mental well-being issues. Now, by mental well-being issues, I don't just mean chronic depression or schizophrenia or clinically diagnosed conditions, but just people who have kind of general anxiety about stuff. And that's because the world we live in is such fast-paced. You have your bills to pay, you have stuff to keep up with. And it is, you know, when your phone is in your hand, it's there all of the time. The world does not leave you. Where is your moment of prayer? Where is your moment of contemplation? So getting out in nature, whether it's building a community garden, whether it's walking down on your allotment, whether it's going for a walk in the forest, or even going out to the ocean. And there's all this thing about the ions that are in the air in scenic places actually have a positive effect on decreasing the stress levels within the body. It's not just that it's scenic. It's physiologically having an impact. So that's the great worship of nature as such. And within that then, how do you find the God and the goodness within you? And then how do you radiate that into the rest of the world?
Beyond Belief on Clare FM.
Well, we're coming to the end of our programme this evening. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you also to my fellow presenters. That's Joanne O'Brien, Brendan Quinlivan, Jerry Kenny, and this is me, Stephen Fletcher, saying thank you so much for listening. This is a reminder that we will be back next Sunday evening at 9 p.m, and you can also catch the Sunday Mass at 9 o'clock on Sunday morning. This is Stephen Fletcher saying goodbye with an Irish blessing. May the road rise up to meet you. May the wind always be on your back. May the sun shine warm upon your face, the rains fall soft upon your fields. And until we meet again, whether online or in person, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. Slán agus beannacht.